direct and powerful 9-0 decision indicates that they believe the genome is something that is important to be, if you will, not using it in the legal sense, but free. And it will make a difference, I believe, both in terms of availability for those who want the tests and also in terms of research. So my view of it is that it is quite an important, well, I know it's an important
Judge Roberts,
and,
we're going to have to leave
decision.
It. We're going to have to leave it there, and I thank you so much for being with us. Also, I know your clerks just got together and celebrated your 90th birthday. Happy birthday, Judge Robert Sweet. Also, thanks so much to Sandra Park and Lizbeth Siriani. I'm Amy Goodman with Juan Gonzalez. Our website is democracynow.org. Thanks so much for joining us.
This is WHFR Dearborn. Hello and welcome to another edition of the new WHFR Journal. We are local news and alternative views for Dearborn and the surrounding area. And who are we? Well, my name is Jake Koronik. I'm station advisor here at WHFR. And I'm joined in the studio, as I am usually, by our WHFR news director, Dennis Reimars. Say hello, Dennis.
I am here.
Okay, we didn't hear that, so it means you're not on the right mic, maybe.
Hello?
There we go.
All right.
Okay.
I like this radio thing.
Yeah, it's DIY.
Do it yourself.
That's right. There's nobody else, so yeah, we just have to figure it out ourselves. Okay, well, what's happening in local news? I have to give a couple of national stories and re-spin them for you if you haven't caught them before, because a lot of people locally that I've talked to over the last couple days don't seem to know what these issues are, and they don't care. Now, I know there's a lot of things that seem out of your reach nationally and internationally, and so why should you be involved when you really can't do anything actively about it? But I do believe in collective disapproval, okay? Collective dissent, legal dissent, you know, maybe emails, letters to your congressman, letters to the editor. You know, let people know general disagreement with what government is doing can be effective. It really can, you know. And we don't let these things happen. Well, of course, what I'm referring to is, of course, the revelations from William Snowden, who people, depending on what news service on cable TV you watch, is either a hero or a traitor.
Mm.
Here's what the New York Times said about him, and this is in an editorial comment from Wednesday. And again, New York Times, liberal. Well, look at this. Snowden's illegal act isn't treason. For several top lawmakers in Washington, Edward Snowden committed the ultimate political crime when he revealed to the world just how broadly and easily the government is collecting phone and internet records. He's a traitor, said Representative John Boehner, the House Speaker. It's an act of treason, said Senator Dianne Feinstein. Again, she's a Democrat. The chairwoman of the Intelligence Committee. That's right, it's her committee. It didn't know what was going on. Anyway, so she's covering her you-know-what in order to stay committee chairman, I guess. Anyway, when it goes on, among prosecutors and defense lawyers, there's a name for that kind of hyperbole, what we just heard from Boehner and Feinstein. Overcharging. Yeah, it's not a credit card thing. Overcharging. Whatever his crimes, that is Snowden, and he clearly committed some, Snowden did not commit treason. If Snowden had really wanted to harm his country, he could have sold the classified documents he stole to a foreign power. But even that would not constitute treason, which only applies in cases of aiding an enemy in time of war. His harshest critics might argue that by exposing American intelligence practices, he gave aid and comfort to al-Qaeda and its allies, with whom the country remains in military conflict thanks to the authorization for the use of military force, which Congress passed after September 11, 2001, and is still in force now. That's also known as the Patriot Act, folks. It's unlikely that Qaeda, I guess you can shorten it, doesn't say Al-Qaeda, that Qaeda leaders did not already know or suspect surveillance before Snowden's disclosures. But treason means more than that, too. Clearly, Snowden did not join a terror cell or express any hostility towards the United States when he turned over the documents to The Guardian and The Washington Post. Snowden's goal was to expose and thus stop the intelligence community from what he considered unwarranted intrusions into the lives of ordinary Americans. My sole motive, said Snowden, as he told The Guardian, which is a newspaper in London, England, I believe, my sole motive, he said, is to inform the public as to what's being done in their name and that which is done against them, unquote. While the principle, the New York Times says, is the right one, he should brace himself for the charges and possible punishment. Most likely he'll be charged with disclosure of classified information under the Espionage Act, which carries a possible 10-year jail term for each count. Snowden broke the agreement he made to keep these materials secret. He appeared forthright in confessing to the act and can use his testimony, should he be brought to trial, to make the case that he exposed a serious abuse of power. That's what civil disobedience means, folks, says the New York Times, although I added the folks point. Accepting the consequences of one's actions to make a larger point. Snowden may well be going to jail for exposing practices that should never have been secret in the first place. And their main editorial for Wednesday, right above it in the New York Times, the alarming age of surveillance. And I have to share this with you, okay, because again, many of you in Dearborn, and I do get out and about, you know, from WHFR during the week, and people say, oh, yeah, it's not no big deal to me. Well, it should be. It is unconstitutional. And but the President of the United States does say it's legal because of the Patriot Act and because of the PRISM Act that authorized this kind of snooping, came out of that intelligence committee, and was voted on by Congress. That's right, your elected representatives, or at least a majority of them, voted on this in 2010. He can do this, okay? They have the technology. They can do it to everybody, not just terrorists, anybody they feel like, for no reason. And I'll go over the Fourth Amendment with you. If you've forgotten your amendments, folks, okay, the Bill of Rights, you know, it's not called Bill of Rights for nothing. You know, these are our rights. These are our constitutional rights. Oh, okay. Alarming age of surveillance.
I just want to say, please, and this is as good a time as any, is that the opinions expressed on the show are not necessarily those of anyone here at the college or the radio station. They're
right.
Just Jay and Dennis.
Absolutely. And the New York Times in this case.
Well, in this case, sure.
Yeah. A new Washington Post Pew Research Center poll found that a majority of the public is untroubled by revelations about the National Security Agency's Dragnet collection of the phone records of millions of Americans, without any individual suspicion and regardless of any connection to any counterterrorism investigation. Perhaps the lack of a broader sense of alarm is not at all surprising when President Obama, Senator Dianne Feinstein, the Democratic chairwoman we mentioned before, the Intelligence Committee, and intelligence officials insist that such surveillance is crucial to the nation's anti-terrorism efforts. And I should say, a lot of the so-called neocons, that is, conservatives that are all for war anytime, anywhere, anyhow, including John McCain. But Americans should not be fooled by political leaders, says the New York Times, putting forward a false choice. The issue is not whether the government should vigorously pursue terrorists. The question is whether the security goals can be achieved by less intrusive or sweeping means without trampling on freedoms and basic rights of whom? Everybody, every single one of the 300 plus million of us, our rights are being trampled on, I believe, and this so says the New York Times too. The surreptitious collection of metadata, as it's called, which is every bit of information about every phone call, except the word-by-word content of conversations, fundamentally alters the relationship between individuals and their government. Tracking whom Americans are calling and for how long they speak can reveal deeply personal information about an individual. Using such data, the government can discover intimate details about a person's lifestyle and beliefs, political leanings and associations, medical issues, sexual orientation, habits of religious worship, and even marital infidelities. The effort is to undermine constitutional principles of personal privacy and freedom from governmental monitoring. The American Civil Liberties Union filed a lawsuit on Tuesday of this week challenging the program's constitutionality, and it was right to do so. Of course, it was 3 years after Congress approved of this.
Because they didn't know.
Because they didn't see that the technology would give this possibility to all kinds of electronic communication everywhere, and they didn't realize that the private contractors hired by the government, which Snowden happened to work for one of them, as well as the monster buildup of CIA computers in this other complex in Colorado that's going up now, which will be the largest computer complex in the world, okay, which everything will go in there. It's just scary, and you know, having that capability means you can use it at any time for any purpose you want. And remember, do you remember, folks, it's now been established in the last 2 years that the President of the United States can arrest, detain forever without benefit of trial or legal counsel any American citizen or anybody anywhere in the world. He can kill anybody anywhere in the world if he just says they're a terrorist, no proof required, and he can kill an American citizen anywhere in the world, including America, if he says they are a terrorist, no proof required. You like that? Well, it couldn't happen to me. That's what a lot of Jewish people said in Germany when Hitler took power. Well, I'm perfectly doing my job as a German citizen, and I'm not doing anything wrong. And then middle of the night, rounded up, sent to the concentration camps, folks. Not just one night, over months, over several years, but 6 million people taken out of their homes for no good reason and put into a prison, tortured, no benefit of trial or any. I mean, that's not the American way, is it? Is it? You want it to be like that? Then they'll come to get you. I sound like Alex Jones. Did you ever hear Alex Jones, Dennis?
No.
Okay. He does a conspiracy radio show, conspiracy-based revelations about everything. Right now he's over in England harassing the Bilderberg meetings, which is supposedly the richest and most powerful people in the world. It's not government. It's the business people. And this is his claims. Okay. I mean, you can look up Bilderberg if you want to somewhere. But he has this program every day on an AM station in Austin, Texas. Austin, Texas, sure. where Jim Hightower lives.
Yes.
Okay. But very different. And he has his app. You can download an app. You can get Alex Jones Radio. His website is Infowars.com.
Oh, sure.
Of course.
Okay.
InfoWars. And he's always believes many, many different ways the government is conspiring against us and a lot of other people, too.
Isn't it funny how this is all starting to come to light then?
Well, but, I mean, he was warning us about this for years. And I read books, folks. Oh, my God. About the buildup in this information gathering capability. There was even a special on PBS, one of those what's it called? Nightline? No, it's Newsfront, whatever. Once a week they do a documentary feature on PBS.
Okay.
and about the CIA and the massive information gathering computer buildup against our country. You say, well, it's okay for them to snoop on foreign countries. Well, yes and no, maybe. They're not America, after all, for God's sake. But because they can do it in the U.S., and you know, everybody knows there are some terrorists in the U.S., although not as many as they're trying to tell us and suggest us. Because interestingly, in the last 2 years, even the head of the director of intelligence, Clapper is his name, he said, "Ooh, because of this system, this PRISM, as they call this computer, PRISM, we've had about a dozen suspected leads." Of course, it led to nothing. No conviction, no trial, no grab them in the middle of the night and send them to Gitmo, nothing. Just like how many people have been caught at airports by our security agents. And what's that called, those security, TSA?
Mm-hmm. at the same time.
Zero. Zero. So, even that bomber, that guy that came to Detroit with the bomb in his pants that didn't go off and he burned himself, who's in prison now, they didn't catch him either. Okay. So, zero.
Okay. Some might say that they have been a deterrent, though, right, because they're there. People right. are not even
and,
trying.
And I say that deterrence doesn't work, okay? And the best example is with murder, okay? Because we have the death penalty, and some states didn't for a while. I'm not sure if all of them have it now. But there is no evidence that having the death penalty for a convicted murderer is keeping anybody from committing murder.
Mm-mm.
So, I mean, it's just, I mean, I'm not just saying, well, he kind of thinks, Cornyn thinks so. I mean, the evidence goes back 10 years that people keep track of this, folks. They write books about it. So a deterrent like that doesn't help. I remember Failsafe, which was a book and then a movie, sort of comic tragedy about the United States with a crazy president and a crazy military leader who sends a nuclear blast towards Russia. And or is this the Stanley Kubrick movie I'm thinking of, you know, with the George C. Scott and Peter Sellers?
Mm-hmm.
It wasn't – Failsafe was a different movie. But anyway, the point was in the movie, and it's certainly true, is that Russia had just activated a doomsday machine that is a number of embedded nuclear bombs, enough of them to cause nuclear winter and the end of life as we know it. But they had forgotten to tell anybody about it. They were going to have a big press conference on their May Day or whatever, their big holiday. But they had connected a week before. So certainly a deterrent like that is no good if you don't tell people about it. But do you think General Jack D. Ripper, that was the name in the story, that crazy guy, that would have stopped him? No, he said, okay, if we're all going to die, at least the Ruskies will die first.
Right.
You know, and good for us that the Ruskies will die first because there are no... Good. He used a choice word there. But so deterrence doesn't work. Okay. Never has. Never will. It just causes more death and destruction afterwards. And the surveillance is not going to work. And in fact, there's not even the need. There's not even the need. I'm sorry. Well, there was that bomb in New England. Yeah, at the marathon. Okay. A couple people got hurt there. That was U.S. citizens. But it was interesting. One guy had traveled to Russia, the main guy out of that duo, the brother duo.
The brother, sure.
And was there, well, actually, it was in Lebanon or whatever, but Russian intelligence warned the U.S. intelligence about him.
Mm-hmm.
No, we didn't do anything about it.
Mm-hmm.
We didn't think it was a credible threat,
right.
You know. So... Gee, you know, this stuff doesn't work, folks, and this is not the way to do it. There's just two paragraphs further in the editorial here, but they talk about democracy in America. What is the Fourth Amendment? Most people don't know it, so let me just tell you what it is. Talk about a public service show, huh, Dennis?
Yep.
Okay. They probably know the First Amendment, freedom of speech. Okay, simply put, there's some other things actually in that. But Second Amendment, they probably know, right to bear arms. Now, I've got bare arms now. Short sleeve shirts. That's right, Dennis. Let's show them our bare. No, bad joke.
Bad radio.
It's one of the. Well, on radio, the puns are fantastic.
Oh,
you know, because
wow.
You can't see the arms, and then they start thinking.
That's why I get the big bucks.
That's right. Okay. The Fourth Amendment to the United States Constitution is the part of the Bill of Rights which guards against unreasonable search and seizures. Did you get that? Unreasonable search and seizures. Along with requiring that any warrant to be judicially sanctioned and supported by probable cause. Okay, so you got to have a court, reasonable people, objective people, a court now, okay, not a couple generals, not the President of the United States, but a court to look at the evidence and say, okay, I give you permission to do a search or a seizure. There has to be reasons for it, okay? And even there, the courts have later said that sometimes they were wrong. That it wasn't reasonable enough, and they've gone back on themselves. So that's the kind of caution you should have in terms of going against the Fourth Amendment. Because how is it reasonable that everybody's emails and internet conversation, internet business, and phone calls everybody should be listened to. That's a search, right? Mm-hmm. They're searching. They're looking for keywords and phrases and things you purchased on Amazon. And they have the capability to go everywhere and track you from the internet, on the internet now, in all communications. And of course, that technology is not going to go away. It's going to stay here. But it just should not be done. Do you know that billions, I even think it's approaching a trillion or two, of U.S. government's budget is going into building these complexes? To snoop on all of us, to snoop on the world, of course, too. Is this the price of what? Living today? A lot of us, patriots, I believe, don't want this kind of life. Sure, I have nothing to hide, and I know Dennis has nothing to hide.
No, not that I can think of.
Yeah, right. Not that he wants to share.
Yeah, if I had something to hide, I don't think I would announce it here.
Yeah, but somebody else could interpret something in your life or my life.
Absolutely.
As being weird or strange or counterproductive or anti-big business or who knows.
Anything.
Anything. And then all of a sudden it becomes unpatriotic. So there you go. Phone call coming in at WHFR. You know, we don't take phone calls during this show, folks, because we're too busy talking. But if you want to leave a message or send an email, it's fine. Our general phone number, unless the voicemail is already filled up, is 313-845-9676. And those messages do get passed along to the appropriate person if you leave one, a voicemail message there. The email is whfr@hfcc.edu. And you can mention journal in there if you want to. That's fine. Happy to do that. So anyway, that's the Fourth Amendment. What do you think? You like the Fourth Amendment? And most people like the First Amendment.
You know,
many people are very vigorously defending the Second Amendment. If you looked at the others, I don't have time to go down them now, but shame on you if you don't know what your rights are and why they were created. I went to Wikipedia, which is not necessarily the best source of accuracy here. There's 21 pages in the Fourth Amendment. Sure, there's been some legal proceedings, but most of the legal rulings, up through 2010 anyway, have been very protective of our freedoms. And the government should not be doing this. Congress was wrong. And so I hope that the lawsuit filed by the American Civil Liberties Union on Tuesday will get to the Supreme Court quickly, and they'll do the right thing.
You know, people had a problem with, after 9/11, of what we called profiling. Certain individuals were scrutinized mm-hmm. more so than others. This is, pardon the expression, is maybe cliche, but almost like a fishing expedition. You know what I mean? This is like, what can we find?
Constant fishing expedition, yeah.
But my question is, did Congress circumvent the court process and enable the government to do this, or did they get a court order to do it?
No, they thought it was a good idea, and I think that they felt that, and first of all, if you want to see the actual wording, I mean, what is PRISM doing? What was approved? What are they getting into? If you search on the internet, of course the government won't track this, but if you search on the internet, the story, and it's one of the two papers that Snowden leaked to,
right.
Washington Post in Washington, D.C., they yesterday posted a story. Here's everything we know about PRISM to date. And it's a very, and no insult to Fox News, but it is truly fair and balanced, I think, in talking exactly about the details. And it goes on, I only printed the first four pages, and that's 80%, that's 20% reduction, by the way, folks.
Right.
So it's very detailed, and you need to know this. You need to think about it. It's your life that they're spying on. Yes, you, whoever you are that's listening, and everybody else, too. And you say, well, I've got nothing to hide. Really? Really? But they can interpret anything you're doing at any time as being anti-American.
Right.
It's so easy to do. Hitler did it in Germany, not just with the Jews, but with the Gypsies, too, by the way. And those Jehovah's Witnesses, did you hear about them?
No.
Oh, bad people in Germany at the time.
Sure.
Because they wouldn't go along with Hitler on anything.
Right.
They were real. Oh, shame on them. They were anti-German. Throw them in the concentration camps. See, anything that a leader who was very popular and probably charismatic too wants to do, it can happen. That's why we have three branches of government, including the courts, to give some sort of check and balance. Check means stop doing that. You went too far.
Right.
You know.
And this article, the Washington Post piece you just to which you just referred, is wonderful because it goes to the heads of the different the obvious internet sources of information gathering, like Google, like Yahoo, and like Facebook, and they all said, "No, we do not do this. We do not do this." So people were led to believe one thing,
right?
Either they're lying or
well, the point is, with the computers they have now. They could hack into Google.
Sure.
They can hack into Amazon. They can go anywhere and track anything. You know, the only thing I actually haven't heard, but I'm sure it'll be possible soon, is that being able to go directly into your computer individually and search your files from a remote location. Any hacker should know that that's possible.
Sure.
But for the government to do that would take an awful lot of people. I sort of hilariously in my mind see that as a new job area that you can probably hire and you will need more people to snoop on us than there are people in the United States because artificial intelligence isn't everything when it comes to snooping. You need subjective calls. Oh yeah. Hey, that's bad. You know, computer just can't make those calls, at least not yet anyway, thank God. And so you know, it'll take a ton of people. One of the reasons, for example, they always talk about it, and England has this, and there's a lot of jobs in England, the country of England, and that is video monitoring. You think we've got video monitoring? A lot of TV shows, crime shows, New York say, well, check all the video monitors of the streets. We'll see if we can get an angle on this person or that person.
24 used to do that all the time, sure. Right.
Well, there aren't quite that many here, but England has them really everywhere. They started about 10 or 15 years ago, and it was a public outcry, but it was only public spaces. It wasn't in your house. At least it was outside. And they had to hire tens of thousands of people to do what? Watch the monitors.
Well, that's just what happened with the Boston Marathon bombings. They ultimately identified these two individuals based on surveillance cameras, and they needed people to come forward with information.
Well, and of course, their private cell phone videos,
that's
too.
That's true, too. Yeah.
That helped them a lot, I believe, finally, ultimately. But that's in public places, and in your home and in your research and in your information gathering and the improvement of your skills and knowledge. I thought America, you know, gave you the chance to learn and develop and grow. Sure, anything that's going to hurt the country or hurt other people, that's against the law in one way or another. But it's got to happen first. The action has to happen first. You know, there was a sci-fi movie where they actually had a computer. And it's sort of like the TV show Person of Interest, where this massive computer sort of can predict when people are going to get in trouble.
Mm-hmm.
And so the premise is for the CBS show is that the one guy who's sort of rogue, he knows how to hack into the computer and use it, and he finds these people that might be in trouble. They're not necessarily bad people, but they might get killed or upset. The computer can sort of look at the trends of activity in the whole New York City, and they give warnings. They flag these people, and they send the guy sends his only buddy, his investigator friend out. He's super rich himself, so he can pay the guy's bill to help them, to find out what's going on and try to help them and help them from dying or cure their whatever their problem is, you know. And it's kind of interesting to see because the computer doesn't tell them exactly why or how that person's going to be in trouble.
Right. Kind of like Quantum Leap.
Yeah, and right, the guy finds himself there, but why? You know, what's the issue going to be?
Sure.
And I can see that happening. I can actually see that coming about. But the other sci-fi movie was more dangerous, and I think, was it Tom Cruise in it? Oh, my God. And that was where the government had a police force that primarily only went out, killed and arrested criminals before they committed the crime.
What was that?
Because the computer was projecting that they were going to rob a bank or they were going to set off a bomb, whether in a couple days or a couple years.
Yeah.
And so
I don't think it was time.
Kill him now.
But yeah. I remember that.
Yeah. Take care of him now. And, of course, that is so wrong, so against American principles. You got to do the deed, okay, before they come after you.
Right.
Now, sure, prevention
Preventive medicine.
Preventative medicine is always the best. Yeah. But there are rights. There's freedoms. And of course, people have a freedom to choose not to do something. If they, you know, somehow do research on, I don't know, making a bomb, doesn't mean they're going to make a bomb, doesn't mean they're going to use it to blow something up, to hurt people, or destroy property at all, does it? No, it doesn't. They could decide not to.
You know what's interesting is we just switched cable companies and internet companies at my house, and when the gentleman was out fixing it, he said you should always enable security on your router so nobody can use your internet. And he went on to say, because if somebody's out there and they say they're interested in looking up information on how to make a bomb, he goes, that comes back to you. So apparently, in his opinion, he's a contractor for this cable company, but he said that they are directed to report certain things regarding some of the content people look at. So that means the surveillance may have actually started at that point.
I'm sure.
So anyway.
A couple of comments here now at Halfway Point. We'll get back to specifically local news and views. And I thought I was reflecting in the first half hour here. Thank you, Dennis, for these are local issues. They're national issues, but they affect every single one of us.
They do.
Every single one of us. And you need to have a position on that and let your elected representatives know. I think what's happening right now, I don't care if it is legal right now. It needs to become illegal. It needs to be found unconstitutional by our Supreme Court. What do you think? Here's Jim Hightower talking about repealing the Patriot Act. Oh, I mentioned that too. And the biggest shock of this NSA security. So here's from Austin, Texas. Here's Jim Hightower, our friendly populist, talking about these same two issues in his own inimitable way.
It's back. The Patriot Act, a grotesque, ever-mutating, hydra-headed monstrosity from the Bush-Cheney Little Shop of Horrors, has risen again. This time with an added twist of Orwellian intrusiveness from the Obamacans. Since 2006, Team Bush and then Team Obama have allowed the little-known, hugely powerful National Security Agency to run a daily dragnet through your and my phone calls. All on the hush-hush, of course, not informing us spies. Now exposed, leaders of both parties are pointing to the Patriot Act, saying that it makes this wholesale everyday invasion of our privacy perfectly legal. When the story broke, Obama dissembled, calling these massive and routine violations of the Fourth Amendment modest intrusions that are worth us doing to make us more secure. He added disingenuously that Congress is regularly briefed about the program. In fact, only a handful of members are briefed, and they have been flatly lied to by Obama's Director of National Intelligence. Yet, Senator Dianne Feinstein loyally defends spying on Americans, claiming it protects us from terrorists. But then she admitted she really doesn't know how the mountains of data are being used. This is nothing but a bottomless trust us swamp created by the panicky passage and irresponsible reauthorization of the Patriot Act. Secretly seizing everyone's phone records is, as the ACLU put it, beyond Orwellian. As a New York Times editorial flatly and rightly says, the administration has now lost all credibility on this issue. But no administration can be trusted to restrain itself from abusing the unlimited power of the Patriot Act. This is Jim Hightower saying, it's not enough to fight NSA's outrageously invasive spying on us. The Patriot Act itself is a shameful betrayal of America's ideals, and it must be repealed.
To get more of Jim Hightower's populist take on what Wall Street and Washington are up to, visit www.hightowerlowdown.org.
It's good to know that our friendly, uber-secret National Security Agency is out there every day protecting our freedom by violating it. A whistleblower has literally blown the lid off NSA's 7-year super snoop program of rummaging electronically through about a billion phone calls made every day by us average Americans. This revelation even prompted Al Gore to tweet, "Is it just me, or is secret blanket surveillance obscenely outrageous?" It's definitely not just you, Al. This latest explosion of the Fourth Amendment is so mega awful that authorities had to invent a new word for the process. Metadata mining. Most shocking, however, is the 10-eared "who cares" reaction by both Republican and Democratic leaders to this outrageous meta-surveillance of our private lives. For example, GOP Senator Lindsey Graham blustered that "it doesn't bother me one bit that NSA has my number." Hey, Lindsey, it's not your number we're worried about. It's NSA's collection of our entire country's numbers. Then came Senator Saxby Chambliss. "We have not had any citizen who has registered a complaint," he blathered. Hello, Senator Clueless. "No one knew to complain since y'all kept the program secret from us." And President Obama was even more ridiculous. He tried to rationalize his wholesale invasion of our privacy by declaring that Congress knew about the program, as did a special spy court that routinely reviews and blesses it. So it's all legit. In a perplexed voice, Obama said, "If people don't trust the White House, Congress, and federal judges, then we're going to have some problems here." This is Jim Hightower saying, "Gosh, sir, we the people have now learned that all three branches of government have furtively conspired for 7 years to violate our privacy. So, no, we don't trust any of them. And yes, that is a big problem."
Hightower's commentaries are brought to you by the Hightower Lowdown, the monthly newsletter with Hightower's take on what Wall Street and Washington are up to. For information, visit HightowerLowdown.org.
This is the new WHFR Journal. Jay Koronik here along with Dennis Reimars, and we're giving you local news and views from the Dearborn papers and elsewhere on what's going on in the city of Dearborn and the surrounding area. I did see in the story, Dennis, that Dearborn Heights Spirit Fest, this was in Patch.com today, was the biggest attendance ever. Did you get over there as part of your job? You have to videotape something?
I did. I didn't do a heck of a lot of taping. My schedule was a little messed. I'm so tempted to blame it on the Spirit Fest, but their schedule was fine. It was the one that I had in hand that was apparently outdated. But no, everybody I spoke to said they had a great time, and it was a packed event. I think other than one day, the weather was fine. So, no, they really... you know, that it's underwritten by Antonio's. So basically they're one of the biggest sponsors of the entire event.
It's the restaurant group.
The restaurant group over in the Heights area. And when I say underwritten...
Well, that's one of their locations. They have like two or three other restaurants around the west side of Detroit.
Absolutely. Yeah. I would say, though, for the Spirit Fest, the one in Dearborn Heights is the focus.
Yeah.
And they, and I don't mean to simplify it, but the way it was explained to me is that if the money comes short for the Spirit Fest, Antonio's pitches in whatever is necessary. So they're a real big part of this. And they were very visible. And apparently, if you can be proud of a sponsor, the city is... really enjoys working with their particular sponsors for this.
A fun time was had by all. It's interesting that there was a story in Wednesday's Times Herald about the block party in West Downtown Dearborn, which I think we mentioned last week because we had a source other than the papers. It didn't get in the paper. There wasn't a story in most of the papers until after it was over.
Right.
So what was the story? Just like Spirit Fest, except there was a lot of advanced publicity for that, but the West Dearborn Downtown Development Authority didn't get their press releases out too far in advance, or the papers decided not to publish them. I don't know, not to put the story in. But so they run these stories. Oh, a fun time was had by all. They had a block party there. Well, what the heck good is that? I mean, it's great to know that other people had fun and you didn't. No, that would make you feel bad, wouldn't it? You missed it. Shame on you. But there's always next year, maybe. The block party, this is their second year in West Dearborn.
Right.
For 2 days. Fun and all kinds of music. I don't know.
Maybe a little face painting.
I don't know. Maybe. That's always exciting. Okay. Looking at press and guide from last week, Sunday, water bills to increase by 6%. And you might say, okay, I know the city of Detroit runs the water plant and costs are always going up. So that's logical. Let me grab the Sunday. Is that it?
That looks like it.
Yeah. Okay. And, but if you read the details, folks, and remember, the devil is in the details, or God, depending on the metaphor you want to use.
How about the truth?
Either way, I think either the devil or God would know the truth. Just they have different spins on it, of course. No, that's Wednesday. Okay, it is the other one here. Okay. There we go. All these pressing guys look alike, except for the stories in them. Okay, if just to keep this accurate, part of the increase, most of the increase, is the increase in water charges by the city of Detroit. And, of course, we don't know who's going to be owning that. Today, that's right, June 14th. Did I mention the date of the show? No, today is June 14th, as we're recording this for the web, for our website, as well as broadcasting live, of course. And Kevin Orr, the emergency financial manager for the whole city of Detroit, is having a big conference with all the debtors to the city, the people that the city owes money to. He's basically going to tell them that with what money the city has coming in, it will take 70 years to pay them off at this rate, if everything stays the same. 70
Assuming
years.
There aren't recurring service charges.
They probably can't wait that long to be paid off, or they won't even be around. So he's going to ask them to maybe take, I don't know, I just heard an estimate. Somebody said 10 cents on the dollar?
10%.
One-tenth? That means they'll be paid off in 15 years.
Okay.
For that 10%. But that's almost nothing. So most of them will probably say, my prediction, and I've been wrong before, like about the weather, is that they will just let Detroit go into bankruptcy. Because then, first of all, it could mean that the judge who's ever in charge of the bankruptcy proceedings could say, you're not going to get anything. Right. Or he could say, you're going to get more. But right. Where are they going to get it from? And the judge has to sort of auction off things. Like the Art Institute? They are predicting selling, not leasing, Belle Isle to the state of Michigan.
Okay.
But hopefully allowing all Detroit residents with proper ID to get in for free, if they agree to that. But, I mean, that they just proposed it. The state has no money, so I don't know how they're going to buy something. But and the other one is sell the water department. A lot of people said that's a good idea. It should be independently owned for the benefit of whom? The whole region. Because we all use the water, mm-hmm. right? So we should all pay the bills up front, not just pay a service fee. In fact, I think maybe the costs are lower. Might be if like the whole like Tri-County, whoever gets Detroit water from the Detroit Water Department, those communities should, in accord with how much water they're using, should try to raise the money collectively and buy the water department and run it collectively. Objectively, for the good of the whole region.
That's a quite a few areas, but quite that a few
will,
communities.
Yeah, but that will, and it'll be more money. Where are the communities going to get the money from? Mm-hmm. But get a bond issue or something. But that will toss a few billion together if they sell some things that should be sold probably to appropriate parties. But it's still not going to pay for the huge debt that they owe to these people. So, but I'm just saying, maybe if they sell the Detroit Water Department to all of us, including the city of Dearborn, and we run it collectively, maybe the rates won't go up quite so fast. But a percent, I'd say about a third of the increase, is coming from an increase needed by Dearborn for sewage.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. So we're not containing our cost. Remember, there's a thing called the Combined Sewer Overflow Project?
Mm-hmm.
CSOP? CSOP? Okay, nobody's ever said that, but I thought that was CSOP.
Maybe it'll catch on.
Yeah. And it's roughly $5 million in each total. That is for the city's water expenses and revenues is $18.6 million. But out of that, $5 million in each total, okay. Oh, the sewerage is projected at over $30 million. So our expenses for water is $18.6 million for next year, and sewage is projected at over $30.6 million. So we pay almost twice as much, not quite, but almost twice as much for sewage treatment as we do for water. But $5 million in each of those totals is for the federally mandated CSOP, Combined Sewer Overflow Project. Remember, that started under Mayor Michael Guido. And yes, the federal government actually started it and said, we got to do it, we got to clean it up. But there were other plans to do it for less than $300 million. And that's what it's going to be, more than $300 million after it's all paid for. And Mayor Guido said to me and others, He said, as soon as the taxpayer of Dearborn realize how much they're going to have to pay on this and what the increases are going to be, I'll be voted out of office.
Mm-hmm.
He thought it was going to be the end of his career. Well, he died before that happened. And actually, cleverly, he kept postponing the start of that extra funding. But it's hitting us big time now. Now, I don't blame Mayor O'Reilly. He's extended this whole project out to 2030, trying to, you know, make the costs a little bit less each year. So he's got permission for that. And they've been very clever, not just the mayor, but the engineers the city's employed this time around, to improve the aging infrastructure under the city streets, which desperately need it as an aging community,
sure,
not just for people, but also for our sewers that are overflowing and, you know, tree roots digging into them and that. And so they're actually improving the basic sewers as well as they improve everything else for the combined sewer overflow. So they're making them bigger, but they're also making them newer. And that wasn't part of the original plan. But there were plans that, well, they wouldn't have renewed our sewers, but they could have gotten this overflow, these overflow ponds put elsewhere in Dearborn, put somewhere in Dearborn, and would have saved us hundreds of millions of dollars collectively, but the city didn't want to do it. Why? Because the only location we had was the Herndon Golf Course.
Oh.
Yep.
Yeah.
Well, not it wouldn't have taken the whole golf course, but it would have reduced, what is it, a 9-hole golf course?
18.
Well, if you play it twice, is it 18 holes?
It's a normal golf course. Sure.
Okay, it would be 12 holes.
Right.
They would have taken over that much space so that you'd only have 12 unique holes, or maybe you could play 9 holes twice.
Okay.
But that would have saved the city and the taxpayers of Dearborn $200 million, two-thirds of the cost, and they didn't want to do that because, you know, the golfers would have been very upset. You know, that would have been very upset. You say, well, there's smell. No, they treat these things. I mean, Dearborn Heights went to pools. They mm-hmm. had area to put the combined sewer overflow into these evaporation pools. We just didn't have any available land to
right.
do that. So there you go. So read the details of these things. And how do you feel about the water bill stuff? I haven't heard any political candidates talking about it. Of course, it's a done deal now. The government says we got to do it. The mayor's plan is a good one. They reduced the cost a little bit, and we're getting a new infrastructure for sewers.
Well, did the federal government give us any? Because when they
no.
mandate something, don't they have to give you?
No. No, they don't have to. No.
Okay.
No, they're not paying for it. No, we're going to have to pay for it.
You have to do this, and yep. You mm-hmm. figure out how. Okay.
Yep. Yep.
Is there something that if the state mandates something, they have to give you some funds for it? I thought there was some kind of a...
Well, you would think so. There are some projects where it's obvious. For example, the federal government had this No Child Left Behind plan under Bush for all the schools nationally. You've got to make these improvements. You've got to improve here. And the school's saying, fine, we'll be glad to. Who's going to pay for the extra teachers, the extra materials, the extra supplies, the extra computers? And the Bush said, well, we'll get there.
Mm-hmm.
No, they never did. So, but they still enforced all the rules. I know in some other states where I have friends, like in Texas, they were being punished for not achieving the goals of No Child Left Behind when they were promised extra funding to
right.
help them do it, and they could have if they had. So, yeah, unfunded mandates do happen,
sure,
as they're called, but they shouldn't,
right?
I mean, if you expect tremendous new things, like the Common Core for Michigan curriculums, and if they need extra money, let's say to hire more foreign language teachers, which is a key provision in Michigan, graduation requirements supposedly requiring it starting in the fall, where are you going to get extra money for more teachers? You can't just assign a math teacher to teach French if they're not qualified for that.
No,
we. Or if they don't know French at all. So, we. Yeah. No. No.
Mais non.
Ce n'est pas possible.
It's not possible.
No. Okay. Yeah, so much for the French lesson. So take a look at that.
That was my limit, by mm-hmm. the way.
Letters to the editor. I'm not personally in favor, personal opinion here, of glorifying war in any way, but an old-time broadcaster who I remember, Bob Hines. Anybody as old as I am, he's an aviator, longtime Detroit TV and radio broadcaster, was host of WXYZ at his Channel 7's morning show from 66 to 77,
mm-hmm.
last millennia, and also hosted a radio show, which I listened to all the time, but he wasn't the first host. Jay Roberts was the first host, but after he left, Night Flight 760, on WJR AM in the 1980s. That was from like midnight to 6 a.m. They would make believe, a theater of the mind, as they called it, that they were taking off on a plane and traveling around the world. It gave an excuse to play all kinds of music.
Right.
You know.
A six-hour show?
Yeah, every
night.
Wow. Right.
Wow.
And they, not all the time, and there wasn't a lot of talk, but they tried to keep reinforcing that they were traveling around the world on their plane.
Maybe have sound effects from a region.
No, they didn't. When they took off, there was a plane taking off, and there at the end, at 6 o'clock in the morning, it was a plane landing.
So if you were in, like, the Amazon, there weren't, like, the sound of wild animals?
No, they could have gone crazy, but it was an excuse to play a wide range of music styles and formats.
And
really personable hosts, friendly people, so like Jay Roberts and Bob Hines. Anyway, he was also a close friend of Sonny Elliott, who was a hero of mine, a broadcasting hero, who passed away last November 16th. Sonny, you may know, was a pilot and combat veteran, U.S. Army Air Forces in World War II. He commanded a B-24 Liberator in a strategic air war against Nazi Germany. His B-24 was shot down, but he survived. He was a prisoner of war for 18 months even. But they both came together as members of the Yankee Air Museum, which is based at Willow Run.
Okay.
And they're thinking of closing everything down and because it costs money. And right now, Bob Hines says they need to raise more than $5 million, and they've raised $3 million of it so far. So the Yankee Air Museum and Michigan Aerospace Foundation would like media champions because they have no money to do any promotion.
Mm-hmm. That's what we are. We're media champions.
That's right. We just became a media champion. Thank you, Bob Hines.
Mm-hmm.
And so if you'd like to participate, here's their website. If you want to save the bomber plant and make it part of the museum at Willow Run Airport, honoring our veterans, honoring our efforts in World War II against the terrible horror of Nazi Germany, which it was, you can go to their website, www.savethebomberplant.org. Pretty obvious, okay? www.savethebomberplant.org for the whole story. There you go.
All right.
So we did our heroic deed.
We're our champions.
We did, yep.
Right.
Melvindale City Council was reported last Sunday's press and guide is arguing among themselves, it was quite a petty battle, but over the fire department consolidation with Dearborn. And the update on that is?
You know, that's, what's interesting is you're calling it consolidation. The original term would have been a merge.
Right.
Merger.
Yes.
See how that's changed?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah, well, yeah, because it...
There's nothing here.
Oh, that's not the one?
No. But no. It's got a little picture and a title, but that's it.
Well, that's all it is. This last Tuesday, and this is not in the papers yet, Dearborn City Council approved merger with... it's Wednesday, so it didn't get any of the papers this week, but...
I'm sorry, I thought your focus was on Melvindale's petty...
Yes, but one part of it in this merger is will the city of Dearborn, will our council approve? It has to be approved by both councils.
Sure.
Where our city council did approve of it.
Okay.
Okay, and then they sent it to Melvindale.
Right.
Now, Melvindale was complaining, as reported last Sunday, from last week. So now they've got the proposal approved by the Dearborn City Council, and it's kicked back to them. So we'll see where they want. It was a unanimous vote, 5-0, on the consolidation plan at the Dearborn Council for an initial term of 15 years. And you say, well, there's seven people on the council. Well, Susan Hubbard hasn't been attending. It's not Susan. It's Nancy.
Nancy Hubbard,
Nancy,
right.
Hubbard hasn't been attending. She's not returning either, so I guess why attend? But maybe, I don't know, illness or something else. And Tom Tufelski said he had to recuse himself.
Hmm.
Okay. Which is that technical term for conflict of interest. You better not vote because people will criticize you later.
Sure.
Apparently, a company he works for does business with the city of Melvindale.
Okay.
So good for him. I love people recusing themselves.
Well, for the right reasons.
Yeah, yeah. You don't want, and especially the publicly elected figure,
absolutely.
Any suspicion that you're doing it for personal interest. Even if you aren't. I mean, even if they can't prove you are, there could be, right? And so that could sway your vote. Maybe you're thinking of potential profits because of it.
So Dearborn is in favor of this, but Melvindale has not voted yet?
Well, they're getting the – no, they haven't voted
okay.
yet. And they're getting the plan of approved by the city here of Dearborn.
Mm-hmm.
And it may just go up or down, or maybe they'll kick back and say, can you make this change or that? You know?
What's interesting is this has been going on for –
quite a while.
Yeah, but they had to go through the unions. Sure. They had to go through initial discussions. It's interesting that Mayor, her last name is Strutz.
She's from HFCC, right?
Well, she works here. Sure. Works in a development office at HFCC, the mm-hmm. mayor of Melvindale. It's a part-time sort of job, but mm-hmm. nonetheless, she hasn't really known what's been going on and said she didn't want to make any statements because nobody's clarified anything. Well, now they got clarity from the city of Dearborn, exactly, right. Specifically. But what it means is the city of Dearborn, if their proposal is approved, basically takes over and runs the fire department in Melvindale.
They only have one chief. Yeah.
Their current chief will become the deputy chief of the whole organization.
Sure.
And no firefighters in Melvindale will be fired.
Mm-mm.
So nobody's going to lose their jobs in either city. Supposedly, they've done studies that response time and the amount of equipment that will arrive in different places in Dearborn and Melvindale even be better than mm-hmm. before. So improved service at no increase in cost.
Right.
It seems. And so we'll see where that goes. And it's a period of 15 years. That's a good long trial period to get things worked out. And it totally makes sense because of the logistics of Melvindale as it connects with Dearborn. I mean, I live in the east side of Dearborn, and accidentally I find myself in Melvindale all the time.
Mm-hmm.
And I still don't know the roads down there. Boy, they're tricky, you know, with all the different the landmarks. It's all in industry. It's refineries and factories, and they all look the same to me.
Mm-hmm.
They shouldn't, I guess. But so and the streets go sideways, and they change names in the mid-course, and that's Melvindale for you.
What's interesting is that there have been quite a few different, I'll use the word models, for successive fire and safety. I remember hearing from Mayor Dan Pileko. He said that the way they do things in some of the communities he went to, actually it was an emergency financial manager conference a couple of years ago, but they talked about ways of consolidating and merging fire mm-hmm. departments was one of them. Mm-hmm. In Troy, for example, the fire is almost all voluntary. They have their gear in the back. They go about their day, and if there's a fire, they're called, and they go have to take care of things. That model may not work here.
We should mention that these kinds of mergers have been encouraged by the state of Michigan,
absolutely.
Our legislature, and our governor, and they've actually put up a little bit of money to help with that. So they needed a little bit more equipment in order to make the merger really nice and to help clear some needs. And, in fact, Mayor O'Reilly, and the show is still on our website from April 19th. Mm-hmm. Go to talkshows at WHFR.FM. Talkshows, The Journal, and April 19th, Mayor O'Reilly's full hour interview. He goes into great detail on what this proposal is, and it seems like it's all happening the way he said. And he pointed out how much money the state, right at that point, the state had just issued the grant
sure.
that was coming to them to buy additional equipment. So some of these costs of consolidating are actually being paid by the state of Michigan, and that was why it's sort of encouraged because in the long run, it should save money and improve service no matter what you're merging. And you said Dearborn Heights is thinking
with
of merging
Garden City.
For what?
For fire.
For fire. Okay.
It's the exact same thing. And I'm wondering, because this is that particular, I wrote about it for the Press and Guide almost a year ago. Mm-hmm. And the reality is that this Melvindale-Dearborn situation may be what
might
a lot
a
of communities are waiting for. Because it makes so much sense the way they're doing
mm-hmm.
it, you know?
Mm-hmm.
And that was my whole point. There's a lot of different ways out there to do things, but it looks like this particular way may work for the communities in this area.
Mm-hmm.
And you know, Jay, they're all connected. There's a downriver association that all the mayors are and the community leaders are part of. And it seems like they tend to work together.
Sometimes they talk to each other. That's great. That's great
to
know.
That's the rumor.
Yeah, once a year anyway when they have those big
gala
meetings.
Sure.
Free lunch. So, okay, let's see what else is here. There's a couple of great updates, but obviously some looming issues from the Dearborn Press and Guide here in Dearborn. We still don't know what the Severstall money, $8.5 million, is going to go to in terms of the is it going to help the new City Hall move in, or what's going to happen? The Dearborn Planning Commission has agreed to rezone City Hall for art space, but only art space for, you know, because they're expected to have people live there. So it has to be at least residential and commercial, although it's a non-commercial organization, but they're going to be selling artwork if it goes ahead. And And, of course, they haven't rezoned it now, but they have voted that if this happens, if ArtSpace actually does buy and then get all the grants and does occupy the situation of the current City Hall, the facilities of the current City Hall, and makes it their own, then they would be willing to, maybe they've already pre-approved it, I don't know, but they definitely said that they would be willing to rezone it, but only for ArtSpace. Nobody else can, they're not saying they would approve this for anybody else at this point. Of course, it's only ArtSpace that has this option to buy right now anyway. So we'll see where that goes. I thought it was also interesting, if you know your people of Dearborn, there is a list in Wednesday's Press and Guide towards the end that the mayor has reappointed a number of commissions to help, of course, run government. And Planning Commission was one of them, but also the Telecommunication Commission. Haven't heard of them for years because the federal government rules on local communities having significant input on cable television and access channels has been pretty much reduced to nothing. In other words, they don't have much power for anything. It's advisory, I would think. Well, anyway, Sean Galloway, who's number two or three in the Going Green Foundation, good friend of Maureen McElrath, he has been reappointed, as had, and I didn't know this, Michael Albano.
Oh,
Michael
really?
Albano has been part of the Dearborn Telecommunication Commission.
Okay.
He is a council candidate, and we have the word out now. We've got, five or six requests out for council, Dearborn City Council challengers.
That's right.
To come in and be grilled by us.
Oh, geez. Oh, you're going to
hey, it's summertime. We're gonna stoke up the grill.
Yeah.
No, it's the same questions we asked Kristen Taylor a couple weeks ago.
Yeah.
That's on the web if you want to see the Kristen Taylor interview. Yeah. No, it isn't. It's the same basic questions. Why are you running and what are you going to get out of it? No,
I don't. That huge paycheck they get.
Yeah, that big paycheck. It's all part-time, of course, folks. But so we hope to have those interviews, maybe even starting next Friday. They haven't responded to us. I guess they're afraid of us.
In all fairness, we just started making the calls. We have contact info for people, and it is the challenger. So if you're listening, this is a great opportunity.
And if you are one of the challengers to Mayor O'Reilly's position, because we're trying to get all the challengers in, if they want to come before the primary in August, we just will not have time. We will not have time to get them all in. So whoever wins the primary in terms of
for the mayor,
the mayor's race against O'Reilly, we will be inviting that person for a big-time half-hour interview. We won't have Mayor O'Reilly in again. We had him for an hour a couple months ago.
Right.
But we will have the challenger in if they want to come, of course. And if they don't, that's up to them, but it's free, folks. So keep WHFR Journal in mind. Again, any emails to us can just go in general to whfr@hfcc.edu.
Somebody asked me, why don't you have the mayor on, too? Well, he's on the station every year. And he does have that exposure, and it's kind of been, I would say, more or less the policy of the show to get the people with the least exposure.
It's my fault.
It's not your fault.
My call is that challengers don't have available resources and funds, and they don't have a name recognition to equal the person that's in office. If you don't know who and what Mayor O'Reilly stands for already, well, don't vote for him, I guess. But where have you been? If you don't know who the incumbents are on the Dearborn City Council, most people do. At least they. Oh yeah, Tefelsky. I've heard of him. I've heard of what's Brian? Probably don't know Brian
O'Donnell.
O'Donnell, mm-hmm. Right? But he's running again, and he got the WHFR bump last time around
as
a challenger,
he did as well.
Right? And it doesn't keep you off. Out of contention if you come on the journal. Just remember that.
Yeah.
There's still a possibility
for
it.
But this year is so wide open because of the number of people.